Everyone, welcome to our village board meeting. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome, everyone, to this beautiful Tuesday night in Alloway. We will call our meeting to order. Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrich, here. Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter, here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Okay, do I have a motion to modify or adopt the agenda as presented?
Move to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
Seconded by Trustee Genrich. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Announcements. Are there any announcements? Does staff have any announcements? Any of my fellow trustees? Trustee Genrich.
Sure. A week from tomorrow night, Heritage Hill is having Big Mouth and the Power Tool Horns play for a concert, free concert at Heritage Hill next Wednesday at 6. Food trucks will be available, as well as drinks to purchase right at the park.
Great, thank you. Any other announcements? I have one. I was in communication with the governor's office regarding our request for a meeting, and they are trying to schedule something for the end of September, early October. I don't know what it will be, but at least we're in communication. Okay, item number 4, public comment. Is there anyone here this evening who would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Alloway Bike Ped Committee. They've just finished up the Arboretum Trail on West St. Joseph Street. It looks great. The Public Works did a great job, but they came up about 30 feet short of making it all the way to the corner, and I was told that the reason that they came up short on, they didn't go all the way to the corner, was they didn't want to have a potentially dangerous intersection with pedestrians and cars. I am concerned that the original budget wasn't big enough to do a complete road reconstruction, and the original budget of $200,000 for that project was only supposed to be for a road resurfacing, and the $900,000 budget that eventually went into place at the last minute included sidewalks on both sides, which was good, bike lanes, which was good, but it didn't have any plans for connecting to the Fox River Trail. So, and then also, that project was supposed to be paid for just out of operating funds from the TID 1 district, and now went into bonding issue, which wasn't planned for. There was an emergency bonding, and so
okay, Jim. Jim.
So the
no,
question
stop.
That I
have, Jim, stop. This is the fourth meeting we're talking about this, and it's also the last.
You have not addressed it. You have not addressed it, and I have
you
the right to bring this issue up,
Jim,
to the board.
Jim,
and I'm asking that you put it on the next agenda.
Okay,
meeting.
Jim. We don't have to let you speak at these meetings. Listen.
There's a time and place for everything.
Listen
this
to
is
me.
The time, and this is the place.
Okay. Last meeting, I told you that if you did not stop
what I'm
bringing this
to
up,
do
okay.
Is you need to put it in writing.
Have a seat. At our last village board meeting, Mr. O'Rourke said that we didn't have the right to not let him speak on an issue. And this village board for 5 years has spent an awful lot of time trying to answer Mr. O'Rourke's questions, and no answer is ever good enough. So he's been given the information he's looking for. He continues to come to the village board meeting and he's welcome at the village board meetings. However, he continues to speak mistruths, and it gives other people in the audience wrong information and the wrong idea. He also mentioned at our last village board meeting that we don't have the authority to not let him speak, and just for his benefit, in our village code, first of all, the State of Wisconsin, Wisconsin Open Meetings Law Compliance Guide put out by Attorney General Josh Cowell says in citizen participation, in general, the open meetings law grants citizens the right to attend and observe open session meetings of the governmental bodies, but does not require a governmental body to allow members of the public to speak or actively participate in the body's meeting. In our Village Code, Chapter 5 of Part 1 under Administrative Legislation, it says the village president shall preside. In the absence of the president, the clerk treasurer shall call the meeting to order, and the trustees present shall elect one of their members as a temporary presiding officer. Under duties, the presiding officer shall preserve order and decorum, decide all questions of order, and conduct the proceedings of the meeting in accordance with the parliamentary rules. So, and then, enforcement. The presiding officer shall maintain order and decorum and may order any person to leave the village meeting if the person has conducted himself or herself in a disorderly manner and persists in such conduct after being directed by the presiding officer to cease. Mr. O'Rourke has been informed that he is to cease on this topic. It's been asked and answered, and I have no interest in not allowing him to a meeting, but I'm going to ask respectfully that you respect this body and move on. Next time, my answer may be different.
President Rapp?
Yes.
Thank you. That clarification helps everybody periodically. And I know it wasn't on the agenda, but I would like a clarification on the Arboretum Trail, which are the trail down to the Fox River Trail, mm-hmm. the sidewalks that lead there, the public access.
Yep.
And it was mentioned a moment ago, wasn't completed because of concerns. It wasn't completed because it's pending the state project?
That's correct. And we'll let Sean talk about that.
The door will be open to address, and it's a valid concern.
Absolutely.
When the state project was done.
Yep. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
Mr. O'Rourke brought that question up. I referred it to Public Works. Sean addressed it at Public Works because I thought it was a good question.
Yeah.
And he'll address that later on.
Okay, yeah, great.
Okay. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to speak tonight?
Judy Poe, 2375 Riverside Drive. This may not be the place to ask this question, but I noticed that you paved over St. Joseph Street with asphalt. Is there an ordinance that says that you cannot use asphalt for a driveway? Must they be concrete?
Good question. Kevin.
I'll share this one with you.
Blacktop is allowed.
It's
one of the hard surface materials that we allow.
Okay. That answers that question. Another question that I have pertaining to this same thing is it allowable if you have two driveways on two different streets to get rid of one of those driveways? Or is there some sort of paperwork or something that I would have to do?
That's another good question.
You're allowed to have two driveways?
I didn't do it. They did it about 100 years ago. But one of them is practically inaccessible because of the highway. And I'm just trying to get some thoughts together.
Yep. You're allowed to get on contractor the curb and gutter that driveway closed.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, that answers the question. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Judy. So now if you have, you know, if you have more questions like that, Kevin's the guy. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on something that's not on this evening's agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to number five, action regarding a request to amend the swimming pool fencing code. If we could suspend the rules, we have
moved just
a village resident.
Aye.
Second, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Come on up, Joe, and introduce yourself, please, and give us your address.
Sure. My name is Joe Kenninger, a recent village resident at 229 Rosemont Avenue. And I just want to commend, you can really judge a group by how they handle conflict with respect, and I just want to tell you how impressed I am with how you handled that. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Sampson for protecting his dignity and bringing back a valid point and giving some hope to the issue. So, I thought that was really well done. My whole experience, why I'm here is because I've been a De Pere resident my whole life, 48 years. And we found our dream home in Alloway. And when I saw the address was Green Bay, I'm not a big political guy. I've been to one board like this in Green Bay for business stuff, and I have to say it's a totally different experience, so this is delightful. So I appreciate that. And so I went to, when we were doing this pool, I went to look at the rules in Green Bay, because my address is Green Bay, and I didn't realize it was a village and so forth. And there was a, and we're looking at doing this pool, and in the Green Bay information, which I sent to all you guys, they have an exception to a fence around your yard if, in fact, you have a certified safety cover that is impenetrable that covers any open water. And so I have a short video. If we can show the video just to illustrate it, it's about 2 minutes, but it does a good job of just showing everyone what that is if you're not familiar.
An automatic safety cover for your pool is a pretty big decision. And if you're wondering what it is, this is it. You're going to be able to keep anybody and anything out of your pool. When it's closed, it's closed. Now, you'll need to check with your municipality, but some building departments will even allow you to use the cover in lieu of a fence. Now, sometimes a neighborhood isn't going to, an HOA may not let that go, but if it's an option, it's a really, really important thing to consider. Opening and closing the cover is very simple. We're going to type in our code into the keypad and press uncover, and the cover rolls right back. Aside from the safety aspect of the cover will also help keep heat in the pool. It's going to help the sun heat your pool up quicker, similar to a solar cover. You're going to use less chemicals because the sun isn't burning off the chlorine. You're going to keep the dirt out and, frankly, have to clean the pool less. To close the pool, we simply type in our code again and press the cover button.
That's pretty much it. You probably see it now.
Thank you. The fabric of your cover should last.
I did find some other information because obviously this is an issue of safety, and so I really want to do my homework on safety. And I looked at the Center of Disease Control Prevention, which you all have, and I didn't have this one in the original. You'll see how I numbered it 1, 2, and 3 because these are the order that I want to explain this. Children who the age of children who drown in pools is 1 to 4 years old, which makes sense. They're toddlers, right? They can't swim. And the number one reason they drown is a lack of supervision, right? So you're having a social time in your home, you're distracted, you might have family friends over, and the child is, you know, does what children do, and they go wander and they fall into the pool. It's the number one reason they drown. It's not from walking into someone's property. That's a very minimal hazard, though it is important to recognize. Number 3 points that side up. And I just want to read lack of barriers. It says, barriers such as pool fencing prevent young children from gaining access to the pool area without caregivers' awareness. Right now, the current policy is a minimum of 4-foot fence, which a 5-year-old could easily climb over. And a toddler couldn't, though. And it says a 4-sided isolation fence, meaning if you were to separate the pool from the area and put one of those mesh fences all the way around the pool, it increases safety by 83%, which proves that the only reason they would have that stat is because the majority of the children drowned because they were invited to the home. And the fence has absolutely no, it doesn't do anything for it because they're just rowing in the, into the pool area. So when I saw that we're progressively historic, I thought I called Rob first because I didn't realize there was a board. I thought it was part of the Green Bay system. My apologies, now I learned. Rob directed me to Kevin. Kevin directed me to Deb. And you guys have all, and then Jim reached out to me. And I just have to tell you, as far as customer service, you guys all responded quickly. I reached out to Kevin. Within 30 seconds, he gave me a call back, which I really appreciated. And he helped me guide through the process of how I can talk to you, to the group. So I'm asking that you consider making an exception to the rule of a fence around a yard if, in fact, it is professionally installed as a locking safety product, as you saw here, and then you get an exception as other ordinances around here have done. And so that's my petition, and I appreciate you making that consideration.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have questions for Joe?
What's the cost of that versus a fence? Of course, a fence could be whatever. But
sure.
On average, if you priced them out, you thought...
And we did. That was part of our consideration. It was $12,000 for both.
Oh.
Yep, it's about the same. And so our pool guy goes, Green Bay is part of it. Well, he didn't realize I'm in Alloway. And so... And Kevin goes, I even got one of those in my pool. But the safety things. I have teenagers, and when I was in the 80s, I would jump fences. And I would go sneak a knife in people's pools. We're not giving our kids the code. I told them that. You're not allowed to have that code, so you cannot force that open without knowing the secret code. And so when we are out there, it'll be open, and when we're inside, we're going to lock it. And that's how it works. But it costs the same. So you, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of interaction did you have with your home insurance company? Are they allowing it? Is there an issue with it?
No issues. They're very familiar with the technology. It's been around, I think, for at least 10 to 12 years. And they have no issue. They actually prefer it because it completely locks the pool in. Meaning
In terms of research, I called 4 insurance companies at random. One said, if you have home and auto with us, then we can.
And they just want your money.
Second one said no. The third one said they might consider it. And the third one said, we're a broker. We deal with a handful of multiple insurance companies. And what we've found is that a few will follow what the city, or pardon me, what the municipality has as their ordinance, and the others will say no.
Sure.
But that's in terms of just trying to at random check a handful of places.
I appreciate
so I'm curious what your feedback was.
My insurance guy said he'll cover it, but he also handles a lot of stuff, so I don't know if he's finding, you know, folks who do. So I just went to Vandries Insurance, and he said, yeah, we can cover that.
Any feedback? Is the pool in?
It's being built.
Okay. Any feedback from neighbors, although they're new neighbors, obviously?
Well, if you look at our property, which is so much like Alloway, all we have is thorn thistles and bushes surrounding the entire backyard. So we have 2 neighbors. And you would be pretty much scraped up and chafed if you tried to walk through there. I know them very well. I mean, they're my neighbors, so I got to know them, and there's no issue. But I didn't talk to them if there'd be an issue, but that's a good question.
Okay, any other questions for Jim? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Take a motion to pick up the rules.
So moved.
Second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Kevin, is there anything you want to share or anyone want to share from staff?
So like Joe had said, I do have one of these covers. My insurance company told me either it's a fence or this cover. It was one or the other. So they are all in favor, and because I have an American family. they're in favor of these covers as well. I guess my only concern is when he sells the house, is the person that's going to purchase the house going to be just as responsible as Joe is? You know, that's the unforeseen future. We don't know the, you know, we don't know what's going to happen after he moves out or what happens after. You know, somebody could move in, keep it open, you know. And how do we regulate that?
If we grant an exception, or what, could you put it to current owner and then review it at the sale of the property?
I don't know if state statute allows us to do that.
We can't
go in for any kind of inspections at the time of sale.
No, and generally ordinances have to be a general application. You can't specifically carve out one property.
Like a conditional use or whatever wouldn't be the approach.
Did that same argument be used for a fence, for getting to shut the gate?
I'm sorry, Joe. We picked up the rules, so now it's just for the board.
Oh!
So, sorry.
First
time. Kevin, to Jim's point, I understand what he's saying, but I think that would go with any piece of property that would sell. I mean, we don't have any control of whether or not they're going to let the roof fall in or if they're going to let the grass grow long.
Yep.
I think,
but I think in the future, if somebody isn't as conscientious and leaves it open, and we observe that for an extended period of time, they'd be cited for not being in compliance with the ordinance. Granted, there's an exception that says you can put this kind of cover on there, but that kind of implicit in that is that you'll actually use it. And, you know, if it sits open for three evenings in a row or something and that's observed, I don't see any reason why somebody couldn't be cited for violating the ordinance because they're not complying with the exception requirement.
Do we have any idea how many pool accidents we've had in Alloway?
None that I know of. I guess that would be more of a question for the first responders and the police department.
Okay. Christian?
Question for Attorney Gasp. I understand regulations about fence height and setback and all that, and the gate must be locked. But the human behavior aspect of somebody leaving the gate open, in this thing, can we be as specific as, you mentioned three nights in a row. If somebody leaves it unattended periodically for a half hour or an hour, can we write into the ordinance that, say, an adult must be present to monitor operation of the cover or something like that?
Exactly. You can put in the ordinance, if it's going to be amended to create the exception, you could insert into there the requirements for the exception to apply, such as if an adult's present, it can be open, but if there is nobody using it, no adult present, it has to be in a locked position. Yes, that could be inserted into the ordinance as part of the exception.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? We'll limit our discussing to questions right now before we... Okay. And just another note that was in our notes, Debbie reached out to neighboring municipalities. The pier does not allow exceptions to the fencing requirements, which I'm guessing is why Joe moved. But they do allow that for hot tubs. And then Ledgeview is very strict with fencing requirements for pools and hot tubs. We don't waive the requirements on it either. But okay. Do I have a motion on this item?
You know, I would
have a lot of options.
I would move to approve it with the code revision being written to even specifically writing in there that if it's observed that the pool is left open, unattended for a half an hour, by a neighbor or whatever could call and complain, and a fine could be levied. I mean, it's hard to kind of write in common sense to a code like that. I mean, having a pool for over 20 years, I don't think I ever locked my gate. Never had an issue. Somebody could have easily gotten in there. I mean, it's tough. I caught Penny in there one time.
Okay, so we have your motion.
Yeah, motion is to write the ordinance and allow the cover.
Okay, do I have a second?
I think procedurally what we should do is you can take a vote on it, but we have to come back and amend the ordinance. Right. You know, have the ordinance protocol.
Yep.
Second.
Any discussion? Trustee Harris.
I'm uncomfortable making the switch. Maybe it's just the tradition of always saying fence around pool. I'm looking at it from a pure safety perspective of child can climb a fence, but there when there's no fence, that's a deterrent. And if there is a gate left open, that's a portion of the fence, everything you can climb, you can get around, you can get through, I understand that. But when there's no fence, there's no physical deterrent, and that, for lack of better words, frightens me. So maybe I'm just, being a little too conservative from that approach, but it makes me a little wary. The other thing with reaching out to the various insurance companies and the responses I got, and they've had to deal with this more than we have, and if it wasn't more positive than the feedback I received, again, that didn't push me towards being a little less wary.
Okay. Trustee Dart.
I have to agree with Trustee Harris. It makes me nervous, too. I'm a grandmother of six little ones, and just the idea is too scary if they're running around. I know my daughter has a pool, and they live out in the country, and my little grandson, who is 18 months old, just stepped into the pool the other day, and my five-year-old granddaughter pulled him out, and my daughter was right there. So it's scary to me.
Does that pool have a fence around it? I mean, I assume, based on...
Yes, yeah. Yes, it attaches to the house.
Well, three-sided, can a kid from the house walk out from the back door and get to the pool without doing a fence? So it shuts the other kids out.
There's a double fence, so...
Yeah. It's a little uncomfortable for me because maybe there isn't 50 years of experience with this new technology, but when we're talking about residents having to shell out $12,000, it better work, and nothing is foolproof. Even the sites I went to, like the CDC was one, or the American something or other, or physicians, they all prefaced it, and they're all covering their insurance concerns by saying many layers of security, don't depend on one. And I think I would have guilt if we enforce this and within the next couple of years a tragedy occurs. But the liability is, when you get down to it, all on the homeowner. And so I would be comfortable, I think, leaving it to the homeowner. I mean, two very expensive outlays, because the liability is theirs. The decision-making maybe should be there. There's, I don't know, I just see such a big cost, as was quoted, that if we can kick this out to the... And I don't know if you would write in the ordinance. Alloway recommends many layers, and our preference or recommendation that people have several layers, but one of these two methods is required. One of these two methods is required. We would... Our recommendation... our enforcement and our staff recommendation is that you have both, but our minimum requirement is at least one. I don't know if we can go that far, or you would write that kind of thing into an ordinance.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Ginder.
How long has this type of pool cover been legal in Green Bay or acceptable in terms of their code? It's been a while. It's a relatively new technology, so it's probably not real long.
I didn't see how long it's been. I just sent you the actual ordinance.
Okay.
The pool company that I worked with, Poolworks, I think they've been installing these for about 3-4 years. So, yeah, it is relatively new.
Okay. My thoughts on the whole issue, I think it's worth discussion. One question I have is the whole liability thing. Is it, well, first of all, experience. So what is the experience of other municipalities who have it? what would our insurance company say about it in terms of liability? If we incur at all any liability for not putting up a fence or requiring a fence. To Penny's point, your grandchild ran out of the house. It was in a fenced area.
With the mom right there.
So the fence didn't help, right? And in this case, if we had a responsible homeowner who kept their pool covered, that would not have happened.
No, they were swimming.
Oh, they were swimming. Okay. Yeah. It would have happened.
It would have happened.
Can't help everyone. but it could be, you know, when you have kids in a house, and unless you keep the gate locked and don't allow them in the yard. But I'm surely not opposed to the idea. I don't know that I'd recommend changing the ordinance right now, but I think we need a little... I wouldn't mind seeing a draft ordinance or a draft change and take a look at what's going on. And take a look, talk to our insurance company, talk to Green Bay about their experience, and have a report, ask for a report from our first responders. We have a lot of pools in Illinois, so have we had, what has our experience been with pools?
It wouldn't be approved tonight. We'd have to come back with a draft
Correct.
Ordinance.
Yeah, it would all be back.
So it would just be to recommend staff to draft.
Yeah, so I would... would you be okay with that, Trustee Atwood?
Yeah. I'd be okay with that. I mean, I don't want to delay the homeowner any unnecessarily.
Yeah, I don't either. This is a pretty important decision, I think. So I think that would be the response. I think that's a responsible thing to do. I would tend to be in favor of the whole thing if I had the assurance that it would be safe. Safer or as safe as the fence. Right? If it's as safe, well, it doesn't matter.
Follow-up question on something like this. Is that you can sue anybody for anything. Would it be actionable if some sort of tragedy occurred? Would they come back at the town or village?
The
if your ordinances were not
restricted? The answer is no. You can't.
Okay.
I mean, the property can be sued for negligence, but if we pass an ordinance and that's an action taken in our legislative process,
right.
It's a legislative decision and we're immune from suit for legislative determination.
Yeah, and it would probably figure into the homeowner civil case what we set forth and if they were following the law. We would have a sense of responsibility, but we might have a sense of, you know, that we have let something slip through, but it's not
actionable against the village. No.
Okay. Thanks.
So I would make an amended motion to ask staff to draft a draft ordinance to allow a fence and or this type of, with all the concerns that the trustees have brought up, and reach out to Green Bay, reach out to our first responders, and see what kind of experience we've had. Do I have a second for that one?
Second.
Any discussion on that?
At that point in time, we can still say, no, we don't like this.
You can say that. Yeah.
So we have that opportunity. Is that what you were going to look for, Matthew?
No, not specifically. I was going to see if we could add one other item to check on, if possible, if we could look at 2, 3, 4 more other local municipalities and just get feedback from some of the others in the area, if any of the others besides Green Bay allow it, or maybe we'll find 3 or 4 where all of them do. I don't know. Let's ask that other question if we could, please.
Okay.
I actually would say I think they're safe if they're used.
Well,
it's just like if you walk away and you have somebody inside the fence, if you turn away, they can...
Right. To that point, a pool cover or a fence is basically a barrier to entry into the pool. They both have to be used with common sense to prevent harm. And for the record, I did not catch Penny in the pool.
Thank you.
Just so you know that my pool cover and my pool that we have, my kids are not allowed near the pool until we are outside. The cover is not opened up until we are outside. If we go inside to do anything, that cover gets shut. That's how responsible I am. My kids are top priority. There's no chance of them falling in my pool because that cover is always closed.
And you can walk on your pool cover?
Yep.
No issues?
No issues.
Can a horse?
They have deer shown on it, and the deer can walk on it. But you have to be responsible. And if you're not responsible, you don't take the proper actions, accidents are going to happen.
Okay. We have a and you are correct. The draft ordinance is, let's see what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And make a decision on that. So we have a motion to have staff draft a sample ordinance for that and to reach out to other communities. And a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. Okay. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Joe. Sorry we couldn't decide today, but
that's okay. You're doing the right thing.
Need to make a responsible decision. Item number 6, action regarding Public Works Committee minutes dated August 14th. Sean.
2015, the water tower off of Webster Avenue adjacent to Heritage Hill State Park was inspected. During that inspection, a number of repairs were noted in the exterior and interior of the tank. Most noteworthy, the repairs included due to ice damage, replacement of the overflow weir box, removal and replacement of the painter's ring inside, and the paint on the inside of the tank needed to be touched up. On the exterior, the inspection noted that due to DNR regulations that 3 new manways were required and that fall protection was needed on the outside of the tank on the roof. In addition, was noted that the overflow pipe on the exterior needed to be upgraded as well. Altogether, the cost of the repairs is estimated at roughly $120,000 to $150,000. The estimate does not include engineering and inspection services. We anticipate bidding this work end of this year, early next year, with the work being completed spring, summer of next year. The work will take, roughly speaking, 4 weeks to complete. To facilitate the repair, recently we went out and we sent out three proposals to three consultant firms and for the design bid and inspection of the repair work. The services also include the inspection of the tank at the completion of the project. DNR requires that every 5 years that the tank is inspected. We had received three proposals. Mike Mollick, myself, had reviewed those. We have selected Strand Associates for the engineering work, and I would recommend that we move ahead with their agreement.
And just to clarify, items 4 and 5 were removed from that, from our original draft. So bidding and construction related services. And why were those deleted?
Their master agreement is a boilerplate, standard language in it.
Okay.
And we do need them to design these repairs. The other thing that was removed.
Drawings and specifications.
Yes, we need them to prepare that as well.
Okay. Okie doke. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
Trustee Genrich. Do I have a second? Trustee Sampson. Any discussion? Trustee Harris.
So this part of the project would be a 2019 expense?
Yes.
Okay. And then in terms of things on the draft, I had a couple questions about the fee as well as on the back page on construction-related services. Item number 3, provide resident project representative for part-time observation of construction. Maybe just blanking on what's part-time observation.
They don't feel that they need to be there full-time to inspect the work. There'll be milestones for the various repairs, and they'll be present at the completion of those milestones to inspect the work to make sure that it meets the plans and the specs.
Okay, thank you. That helps. I looked at it, 8 visits for 64 hours, so they'd be spending a full day there, just not
Right.
And then with regard to the fee of the $34,900, it's an estimated fee with an hourly rate basis plus expenses. Do we have a cap on the fee? What's the hourly rate? What are we looking at for number of hours? What are they anticipating for expenses? Can we get that broken down a little bit further, please?
Well, yeah, we can. Yeah. And it's a cost not to exceed.
Oh, I didn't see that. Did I miss that wording?
Unless they changed it. Yeah.
It says that it would be on an hourly rate basis plus expenses, an estimated fee of $34,900.
Right.
So not a not to exceed.
Yeah, it's not a not to exceed.
Right.
On page 2 of the agreement, lump sum or estimated fee for the services. Lump sum. Our estimated fee will not be exceeded without prior notice to, okay.
And agreement by the owner. So if we don't agree, they still have to perform the work for that amount? That's a good question for Trustee Gates. Attorney Gates.
I haven't reviewed it.
Okay.
I can't.
No, that's okay.
Last page, owner shall compensate engineer for services under this task order on an hourly rate basis plus expenses, an estimated fee of $34,900. Yeah. And you know, they haven't started the with every project, there are some unknowns. You know, do everything we can to keep it to that number, hopefully less. But this is that, you know, this includes design, bidding, inspection, and then at the end to complete a DNR mandated 5-year inspection of the tank.
I understand all the different things they've got to get done in there. I was just trying to look out just in case of, you know, not knowing what you're saying are unknowns, what could we run into? So that's why I'm kind of hoping for a top end.
Well, yeah, inspection was done in 2015, and I'm sure that, you know, when they go in there to, he's gonna come up here next week to take a look inside of the tank, and during that review, there may be things that weren't present during the 2015 inspection that we may have to address. So, if that is the case, if we have to amend this agreement, there'll be a change order from the services.
Okay, and maybe I'm I'm looking at that from if they find something else, then your 120 to 150 could increase or change, but the set out services for this part of it, I thought, would remain relatively static.
They should, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But the standpipe was built in 1967?
1968.
68. So we know that there could be issues that we don't know.
It was last recoded interior, exterior in 2005.
So until we get in there, we won't really know for sure, and we can't hold them to that, and
right.
They can hold us to that. So.
Right.
Cool.
One other thing is, we can ask them to not to exceed, but I believe the responsible answer would be we can only do it based on the hours, right? Mm-hmm. This is our hourly rate.
Okay.
If we run into other things, but that's pretty much guaranteed anyway because it's an hourly rate estimated for a certain number of hours.
I'm with you. I'd just rather raise the point.
Yep, good question. And that's why we have Sean. He's going to make sure they don't exceed. Any other discussion on the item? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Sean, could you just give us, while we're on the Public Works Committee, could you give us a quick update on the sidewalk on St. Joseph?
Sure. We elected not to extend the sidewalk to Riverside Drive for two reasons: safety, and without knowing the connection to the Fox River Trail, we didn't want to build something this year that we'd have to remove 2 years from now or 4 years from now when we do build the connection to the Fox River Trail. We didn't want to encourage people to go to Riverside Drive because there aren't pedestrian accommodations on Riverside Drive right now. There isn't a sidewalk, there isn't a bike lane, and there isn't a safe crossing. So we made a decision to stop the sidewalk short of Riverside Drive for those reasons. The DOT had put together preliminary plans for the reconstruction of Riverside Drive in 2017. They had taken the plans to about a 60% level. Those plans had included two lanes in each direction, medians, did not include bike lanes, but it did include sidewalk on both sides. Unfortunately, the project was put on the shelf, and they have no plans right now to reconstruct that roadway.
But you are looking at options and trying to prepare for it in the
Yes, we are. We have, and we'll be meeting with property owners to get feedback from them on a future connection. We will be putting together some conceptual layouts so that we can determine cost and impacts and possible right-of-way needs, and we'll go from there.
And just to clarify, when you say they have no plans to update that, they have no plans in this year's budget, but somewhere down the line, or are you saying
it was the project?
They may never come, or they may not come back to it
someday,
for some time.
Someday, but they haven't given us a year. They put the project on hold. They put the plans on the shelf, and we've been told that they don't have any plans in the near future to reconstruct it. They're happy with the way that the street resurfacing has held up. They had put on just recently, and I think they're planning another one. So,
okay, I somehow had it in my head or thought I'd overheard that our big decision on that might wait till the DOT, or our big opportunity to hook up or have a nice crossing there would wait until the DOT. That's not the case at all, if it ever was. Okay.
Yeah.
We can surely petition the state and let them know we want a crossing, do our homework, and push them to work with them to get that crossing, which everyone wants.
But it might be on our right-of-way in a village project.
regardless of what they do and when.
Most likely it will be within their right-of-way, state right-of-way, along Riverside Drive.
Yeah. So you need their approval, but maybe we would we pay for enhanced sidewalk or something there? Or would
well, we'd look, we could possibly look at grant opportunities, such as a traffic alternative program grant.
Yeah.
The DOT DAP grant.
Okay, thank you, Sean. We'll move on to item number 7, action regarding amendment to land purchase agreement with SKB Terrace LLC for the property at 3241 and 3245 Riverside Drive. Trevor.
Yes, so I provided in your agenda package just a brief background. I think we're all familiar with the property. It was for sale for a couple of years, and the village sold it last year. At the beginning of this year, we actually closed on the property. Yes, SKB Terrace. SKB Terrace had the plans to go forward and construct an office with an owner-occupied residence above. They went through the proper zoning for that. They received the conditional use permit to do a mixed-use development on the site. However, because of a number of different factors, the timelines will not be able to be met. Part of it's just a lot of the... Now, I'll let... There's a representative here, Ms. Clausen. They can explain this a little further, but... A lot of contractors are busy, costs keep going up, and as a result, the timeline has changed, but also the scope of the project, your project has changed slightly. So, again, Ms. Clausen's here tonight, and she can explain it a little bit further.
Do I have a motion to suspend the rules? Trustee Gendrick, seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Ms. Clausen, would you like to come up? Please give us your name and address for the record.
Okay. I'm Karen Clausen, and I live at 1665 Remington Ridge Way in De Pere, and my office is in De Pere at 801 Heritage Road. My company is SKB Management. And I just wanted to read, to kind of give you an update on what's going on with this property. The original plan was for a building with approximately 2,500 to 3,000 square feet on the first floor for an office for my business, SKB Management, and approximately 1,500 to 2,000 square feet for another office for lease. And then about a 2,500 square foot apartment on the second floor. The early estimates indicated that this project was economically feasible. It took from June 2018 to July 2019, about a year, working with a well-known Green Bay architect to develop the building plans for this building. And this July 2019, the project was bid by three highly experienced and respected commercial builders in the Green Bay community. The cost of the construction more than doubled from the estimated cost in 1 year, from June 2018 to July 2019. While the original plan was feasible at the original cost estimates, the most recent cost estimates moved the project into an area that was not economically viable. It did not or does not pass the test of long-term viability. Yes, I could proceed, but no one would ever pay what it cost to build it. Basically, the increased cost put the project beyond its intended use. Therefore, I've chosen a different path, a path that makes economic sense. I propose to build an upscale apartment community, estimated at 12 to 18 apartment homes. The office of SKB management would be designed from the space of two of the apartments, leaving the balance of 10 to 16 units of apartments for rent. I've been building and developing and managing apartments since 1983. It is, in my opinion, that an upscale apartment community, along with my office, would be the best use for this site. I actually brought along some pictures that I would be happy to show you. And these are pictures of properties that my company manages, some of the properties I've built. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to see what my vision is for this property. So can I walk and show you?
Absolutely.
Okay. The first property I'm going to show you is, it's a property that is 2.5 acres in Grand Chute, and it's called Parkwoods Apartments, and there's 24 units, and with a beautiful pond in the middle, and highly desirable. We're full all the time. So I was going to show you pictures of that. The second property I want to show you pictures of is to give you an idea of my vision for an office for my company, SKB Management. We have a property that we built in Appleton, and it's called Sunrise Park. It's 220 units. You would probably think it's new, but it's already 20 years old. But we took two apartments, and we turned two of the apartments into an office for this community. And so it's an office for the project, as well as a clubhouse for the residents to use. So I wanted to show you how you can do that. You can literally take a couple of the apartments and then redesign the building. And that's what my intent is. And then I also have a few other properties that we're currently managing that were developed in the last 5 years. And to give you an idea of the scope and how nice these properties are.
Okay.
This is Parkwoods, and this is the property that's 24 units. As you can see, there's a pond in the middle of it, and give you an idea of the look of the building. So you've got like a cedar shake and stone and brick, upscale garage doors. So that's one property. And shall I just...
Why don't you just finish real quick?
All right. This is Sunrise Park. This is the one that's in Grand Chute, 220 units that we developed. And this is a building, and we actually created the office and the clubhouse. And these are some of the other properties. This is one that's called Hickory Park, which is in on the west side of Green Bay. You can see how nice that is. That's about a year old, if that. Here's another one called Maple Park, as you can see. And the last one I'll show you is Southwest Park, which is in DePere. Okay.
Okay, so you got that half. They,
all right.
They all saw it. So
yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
So why don't we come down here and get this half? And I saw it.
So here is Parkwoods in Grand Chute. And this is 24 units on 2.5 acres.
and you can see the pond, the property. And I can leave these pictures with here in the event you wanted to see. And this is the design of the building.
Okay, great.
Okay. This is Sunrise Park. This is a building.
And that's your vision for?
Yes, something like okay. that. Of course, you know, this it's going to be a lot different because it's, you know, this is 20 years old, even though it's all brick and it's really nice and it's a beautiful property. But it's just, again, the vision of creating an office out of two units. Here's Hickory Park. This is a property that's brand new.
Okay.
And as well as about a year old.
Okay.
And then West De Pere is another property that is probably about 3 or 4 years old.
And I don't know if I know anybody who lives in those developments or not, but the trim, the amenities, the quality construction would be apple to apple with those properties?
Yes. Two bedrooms, two baths, fireplaces, stainless steel appliances, in-unit washer dryer, you know, 10-foot ceilings, oversized doors, solid doors, big windows.
Yeah.
Some sort of
I'm sorry, Karen, could you go back to the mic then?
Yes.
Just so everyone else can hear you.
Okay. And some sort of, ideally, some sort of water feature, whether it's a small pond or a fountain or something.
Any idea on price points, guesstimate, where you hope to offer rent at?
Well, I did an analysis for this project, and I was conservative in the rents, and I estimated the expenses high, and it will be a successful project. The rents are probably going to be in the neighborhood of probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $995 up to $1,200, depending on square footage and amenities.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from Ms. Clausen? Hearing none, we'll say thank you very much.
Okay.
And we'll just talk a little
Do
bit.
Do you want me to leave any of this?
You could leave that
here
with Trevor, that would be great.
Okay.
Thanks. I would make a motion on this item to refer it to a closed session because we're negotiating an agreement and we're being asked to change the agreement based on the value and everything, and I think it's probably responsible to do that in a closed session and then bring it back to a public session to discuss it.
I'd second that.
Pardon?
I would second that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Ms. Clausen. Still looks like a nice project. Hope to help you out with it. Action item or number 8, historic preservation update. Trevor.
Do we need a motion to take up the rules?
Thank you.
So moved.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Genrich. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Okay. Historic preservation update.
Yes, and I'll keep this brief. Just wanted to give you an update. As it's been a while since I think you've heard anything regarding historic preservation. The first is last year, we received a grant from the state to do the nominate the Robinson Hill, which is the Derby neighborhood, to the historic register. That's been submitted to the state. We've been told that it will be reviewed by the State Historic Preservation Review Board in late this year. They are going to meet quarterly, and they have a backlog of projects. So we're told that once they review it around the December time period, then the National Park Service has 90 days to review it. So by spring, we should have some indication of where we stand with that project. There's been a couple other developments. Place these on your space in front of you. I just wanted to show you what the committee's been up to aside from just the nominations. It was a goal of the committee, the Historic Preservation Committee, to partner with the Historic Alloway Society. So the two organizations exist, and sometimes they get mixed up, but one is a recognized committee by the village, and the other is the citizen group. So it was a goal of the group to partner together. This is one example of how they partnered together this year. The members of the Historic Preservation Committee came up with a story and some information regarding the Sunlight Park neighborhood, which that subdivision was celebrating its 100th year anniversary. Together with the Historic Alloway Society, they put together this brochure that then was passed out at the annual picnic this summer. So, really good information in there, pretty brief, and there's more detailed information, a couple pages, that was also in the Historic Alloway Society's newsletter. The other thing I wanted to bring up is the state of Wisconsin put together this CLG annual report. And I have a booklet that I was given six of them, so I can provide you if you desire. Otherwise, I provided a summary sheet that they provided us. And it really just kind of clears up any misconceptions, any of the common misconceptions with realty stats. So not every community is a certified local government. Village of Alloway is. And sometimes a certified local government is given maybe painted in some bad light because of the time it takes to approve different things or things of that nature. This just shows that one stat here, that the time of review was about what was expected or maybe less what was expected. The most items being reviewed are actually approved. So just real quick scenario, again, they do go in more detail in the full report. They do give actual examples of different projects in different communities. So if you're interested in that, I can definitely provide that to you. And then the last item I wanted to bring up, there's been a couple different proposed legislation changes to historic preservation laws in the state in the past couple years. Two of them have been successful as far as being passed and have become law. And so this summary sheet gives the two recent changes. I believe the first item we've discussed here before, it really had no impact to us because what the state required by this piece of legislation, we were already doing. So really, we didn't have to change anything. The second piece was passed in 2017, and it really took up until late last year to try and get an interpretation of what the state legislator was going after. Really doesn't impact us, per se, as far as policy, or like enacted law, but moving forward, when we review projects, this indicates that it allows a municipality the flexibility to approve things that are alike. So an example that I gave at the Historic Preservation Committee is, say, a roof wanted to be replaced. And maybe that roofing material or maybe the siding material, whatever it is, doesn't exist anymore. Well, the old rule of thought was, you know, it has to be replaced with exactly what it was. This gives the municipality the flexibility to say, no, from the street, that looks very similar, and it looks pretty much like the same material. And I think that different industries have come a long way, as far as even vinyl or metal roofing, that be able to match different materials really well. But so again, that's just a nugget, I guess, to store away for future reference. But again, the point was just to bring you up to date on different projects that the committee is looking at.
Great, thank you. So has that law passed or is that in the works?
That has passed, yes.
Okay. Any questions for Trevor? Thank you, sir. And thank you to our Historic Preservation Committee and the Allied Historical Society. Okay, item number 9, future agenda items. Any board members want something on a future agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to item 10. Do I have a motion to convene into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1E, deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session? And specifically, the developer's agreement for 2050 Riverside Drive. And Wisconsin Statute 1985-1G, conferring with legal counsel for the governmental body who is rendering oral or written advice concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation which it is or is likely to become involved. Do I have a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Trustee Atwood, seconded by Trustee Genrich. Any discussion? Roll call. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. Trustee Dirk.
Aye.
Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
Aye.
We are in closed session.